I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. If you've ever been in a wedding, then you know there's a lot more to one than meets the eye. That may be why it's a theme often visited by filmmakers. Today, the DVD gurus look through the camera's lens to give us their picks of the most notable nuptials on film. From the dramatic to the comedic, here comes The Bride. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. You know, they come across as such tough guys, but the DVD gurus are really something else entirely. They're softies. Major League softies. When the time came to pick a topic for this month, they quickly latched onto the idea that June is the month for weddings, for commitment, for launching lifetimes filled with love and bliss. So Jason Heck and Mitch Bryan picked the theme of movie weddings for their show today. That's Happy Weddings, Crazy Weddings, and films with titles such as Wedding Crashers, Bridesmaids, and Father of the Bride. The DVD gurus are Mitch Bryan, who's a screenwriter and UMKC film professor. He also writes for 435 South Magazine. Mitch, how are you?
It's great to be here.
Welcome back. Jason Heck is a movie reviewer for Inc. Magazine. Jason, you old softy, nice to have you.
I do.
Who would have thought so? Yeah. So what does June mean to you, Mitch?
June is the anniversary of my parents.
Yeah, there you
so
go.
There, and my mother's birthday.
There
June
you go.
Is full of happy things, and we thought we'd do this June Brides. And I saw the undertitle being For Better or Worse. Mm-hmm. Seems to be, you know, and some of these weddings are more successful than others. But all's well usually ends well.
Did you get married in June?
I did not. I got married in September.
Yeah. Mitch.
I'm a July guy.
You ruined our theme.
And what does June mean for you?
D-Day. So, that was actually yesterday. This is actually Mitch has mentioned that being that Mitch and I are most assuredly two guys that our shows occasionally skew toward the heavily male, and that it's a good idea for us to remember that half of the audience for movies is women, and these movies in general cater to that particular demographic, but that doesn't mean that they are not immensely enjoyable for men as well. We found some real good ones.
Well, I gather that it goes without saying that weddings are, you know, just great fodder for movie makers, right, Mitch? I mean, there's really not much question about it.
Yeah, it's an environment where, of course, all sorts of disparate people come together, hopefully for the same reason, to wish the bride and groom well, unless there's that person who's going to stand up at that moment, you know, when you can put the wedding into a tailspin, which doesn't happen that often. It happens in The Graduate, you know, a little late in the game.
It happens in the movies a lot more than it happens in real life.
That's for sure. Yeah. As seems to be the case with Runaway Brides too. That seems to be more in the movies. But I think that the interesting thing about weddings is we started looking through sort of the history of films to see what we had, and a couple of things kind of came to the surface. And one is that married couples don't tend to populate movies as much as you would think. A lot of movies end with a wedding or end with the lovers headed towards the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
Or there are certainly occasional movies about marriages breaking up. But you also don't see many movies about men, you know, men and women who are married. I mean, there are a few. Adam's Rib is an example.
Right.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Bang, 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 that's one. But I thought that was sort of interesting as we were kind of going through this list.
We at that point, it's sort of in earlier, older times, I think weddings or marriages rather were much more common fodder for sitcoms.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was, you know, your stable base that you built your wacky, you know, that was your easy premise, and then wacky situations kind of happen. But weddings are great fodder for movies because you can go, you know, serious drama and boy, those vows are, you know, going to bring a tear to your eye, or you can go, you know, wacky madcap mix up and the cake falls over. And so they are a situation that is pregnant with possibilities.
Yeah, and so that's why we see so many movies that deal with the topic of weddings.
Right, and you know, it, and you know, like Mitch said, there are plenty of movies where you know that Mr. Right will stand up and say, you know, I can't let this go forward. And so, you know, it's kind of, does anybody, you know, speak now or forever hold your peace? Someone stands up more often than not in a movie.
What was that double wedding thing that you were talking about?
Well, we were talking before the show about getting around the Hays Code, the sort of the old Hollywood code, and how you couldn't really show infidelity. But there was this sort of genre, a subgenre of comedy, which was kind of a double wedding thing. And the ultimate example of that is the Philadelphia Story, which is, you know, everybody gathers for Katharine Hepburn's wedding to this stand-up guy. But, you know, Cary Grant's in there as the ex-husband. Well, turns out that he was the right guy the whole time. And so while they're sort of bickering and fighting and then realizing that they're magnificent, turns out that's kind of what the wedding's going to be. She's going to remarry Cary Grant. And so it was this great way to show a little tension and what would be regarded by sort of more priggish kind of censors as infidelity. But in fact, it was a way to show, you know, to get away with that while depicting what was true love, I guess you could really call it.
The great goal of movies prior to the Hays Code going away, you know, was this celebration of heterosexual romance. Mm-hmm. And so you really couldn't have movies where there were divorces or where the wrong person – somebody was marrying – if they'd already gotten married, you know, you couldn't really tear that marriage apart. Yeah. So you'd find the way to do it right before the wedding happened, you know, to get everything to go south.
And so, you know, you look at a movie that focuses on a divorce like 1939's The Women, and at the very end of it, you have Norma Shearer running back to her husband and literally embracing the camera sort of as she embraces the husband. And, you know, that's – and the whole focus of that movie is a divorce, but it kind of –
you can't advocate it in the end.
Bingo.
Though.
Yeah.
Well, have you ever been to a wedding where someone actually stood up at the moment when the – minister says, hey, does anyone here object to this wedding? And someone actually stood up and said, well, as a matter of fact, I do.
I stood up at Mitch's wedding. at the time, Mitch and I had sort of been trying to define our friendship. And I said, you know, we should always be single dudes and roommates and movie buddies. And I stood up and Mitch kind of fired off a look that said, you know, sit down and shut up. And so that's honestly where we've evolved into the DVD gurus.
So the answer is no, I guess, to my question.
That's right.
As far as you know.
Yes. Well, if anyone out there has been to a wedding like that, I've never have been or heard of anyone who actually has. 816-235-2888. It might make for a good story today.
Yeah.
Our email address, update@kcur.org. Let's start off here. Jason, you wanted to speak about a 1950 film, Father of the Bride.
Yeah, a movie so charming they made it twice. It was remade in 1991 with Steve Martin in the Spencer Tracy role. But, you know, Tracy at this point in his career in 1950, you know, had become kind of an institution. He was very, you know, you knew what you see was what you got with him. And he was this very a figure who represented integrity. You know, he tried to branch out in sort of like 1940s Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and he wasn't really good at that. You know, Spencer Tracy played villains the way Gregory Peck played villains. He didn't do it real well. So, you know, here he is as this you know, suburban lawyer living in this unbelievably idyllic life. You know, his wife, played by Joan Bennett, you know, they ring a little bell and their maid brings coffee in after dinner. So, you know, it's like these are definitely first world problems that he's encountering. But his daughter, Kay, played by an absolutely luminous Elizabeth Taylor, has fallen in love with a guy with the the very waspy name of Buckley Dunstan.
Buckley Dunstan.
Of the Boston Dunstans, that's right.
Yeah.
Played by Don Taylor. And, you know, he is, you know, he's 26. He owns his own company. His parents are incredibly wealthy. So, again, these are sort of non-problem type problems. But what happens is that this small little wedding that Spencer Tracy is going to pay for sort of grows into this monstrous thing with hundreds and hundreds of people. And it's about letting go a little bit. It's, you know, Tracy kind of adjusting a little bit and saying, well, I was 25 when I married your mother and you know, you're too young to get married, but realizing that, in fact, Kay, for all of her seeming flightiness, is a grown woman and knows what she's doing. It was directed by Vincent Minnelli, who gave us things like The Long Long Trailer and Brigadoon, as well as The Sandpiper.
Well, was Liz Taylor a great actress?
I mean, younger.
In terms of the art of acting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and stuff like that. Absolutely. I mean, this is Liz at her youngest and sort of most ingenuous. You know, she was playing a mixed up crazy kid. We'll throw that in quotes. But yeah, she does just fine. You know, squaring off with Tracy, it's a dad giving up his little girl. Mm-hmm. So there's that wonderful dynamic, and they really encompass it just right. She is very headstrong. She is marrying this terrific guy and won't, you know, I'm not going to let you stand in my way. And but of course, she leans on him and she loves him and she depends on him. And Tracy is, he's what you want Spencer Tracy to be. He's a little bit grouchy. He's a little bit overwhelmed. They, you know, there's this wonderful scene where he and his wife go over to Buckley's parents' house for a get-to-know-you dinner, and he is plied with all sorts of liquors and kind of nods off in the middle of conversation, like right on the couch. And, you know, the wedding, Leo G. Carroll, the wonderful Leo G. Carroll, plays this caterer who comes in and immediately starts demolishing the house. You know, he's saying, well, we have to get rid of this door, and you have to have movers take away this much furniture. And he's, you know, so Tracy is now watching his wife kind of crumble under the withering glare of this caterer, and he sort of tries to step up, but the wife's like, no, don't anger him. And so he's trying to figure out his boundaries as well. And
how old is Liz Taylor in this film?
She's born in 32, I think. So this would put her at 18 years old. So
she's young.
I mean, she really, her figure is amazing. Her beauty is amazing. She's just really incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So great film.
Absolutely, yeah. And like I said, remade in 1991 with a more contemporary vibe with Steve Martin and Diane Keaton
as the
parents.
Actually, that was a good film, too.
Really good movie in its own right. This one was followed by a movie the very next year called Father's Little Dividend, where Liz Taylor has a baby. And, you know, the situation is just as manic and mixed up and
kooky as
it
was in this.
Direct sequel.
Right?
Yeah. And Father of the Bride in 91 was followed by Father of the Bride 2, which was the same premise, that she has a baby.
Well, Steve Martin, Diane Keaton film, I got a big kick out of. That was just a lot of fun to
watch.
It's actually
a really good remake. There's nothing really wrong with it. I just, for me, Spencer Tracy is, he's so terrific that I tend to sort of, if given a choice, I'll always go for him. Mm-hmm. He's just, in movies like Adam's Rib and, you know, Woman of the Year and all these wonderful things he did with Kate Hepburn, where he always played kind of a grouchy guy in the middle of something, trying to be the firm base where, you know, manic stuff kind of went on around him. And, you know, my favorite scene in Father the Bride is there's having a huge party, an engagement party, and he's makes up this huge tray of martinis in the kitchen to be that great suburban host. But everybody comes in and is like, I need 4 rum and cokes. I need 3 Tom Collins. I need 2 old fashions. And he literally never leaves the kitchen for the duration of this party where he's supposed to give a big speech. And he comes out ringing this bell, ready to give a speech as his wife is ushering out the last of the guests. And it's this really just this terrific scene where he's so put upon and trying to do everything right to keep everybody happy that he just kind of gets clobbered himself. But it's terrific.
What's the clip we have here from Father of the Bride?
Well, the wedding has the expenses have gone through the roof, and Stanley,
which tends to happen.
Yeah, the 75 person reception has grown to 250 and 580 in the church, and he's finally said, you know, it's a matter of survival. So he goes into the Kay's bedroom and offers her a chance to elope, but is quick to retract when his wife comes in.
Okay.
You know, Kit and I had an idea.
What is it?
Well, I don't know whether it's any good or not, but I thought to, well, I was wondering if I gave you and Buckley about $1,500, how would you like to elope?
Elope?
Yeah. You know, tomorrow or the next day you run off somewhere,
but to... Pop's eloping. Sneaking off and getting married. Well, I feel sort of... Well, as if something were wrong. As if you didn't like Buckley and didn't want me to marry him.
Oh, kitten, I don't think it would...
But to get married by the Justice of Peace in some dirty little office? With you and Mom's not there? Well, I don't know, Pops, but I don't think I'd feel as if I were really getting married.
Well, it's just an idea, you know. It's a, forget about it. I'm coming, Ellie.
No, Pops, if you're worried about the money...
No. Just forget all about it. That's forget I ever mentioned it. Forget it.
Stanley, you've just got to help me. I'm going crazy trying to cut this thing down. Take Bob and Betty, for instance. If we ask them, we have to ask the Dixons. If we ask the Dixons, we have to have the Warners. If we have the Warners, we have to have the
Let's call the whole thing off. Let's not have the wedding.
Okay, what are you talking about?
Buckley and I could run off. We could elope.
Hello?
Now, look, I told you that I didn't want you to talk about that eloping nonsense anymore. Now, stop it. The poor kid, she's worried and afraid I'm spending too much money.
Okay, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't elope. Why, it would break my heart.
Why, of course she wouldn't.
But, Pops,
Now, I've heard all about this. I care to hear. Now, stop it. Stop it, really.
Let's call the whole
That's
thing
That's right.
Off.
Hard to believe only 6 years later he was karate chopping the hell out of Lee Marvin. You know, it's a charming
Moms, pops,
film. Right.
Yes, all of that. I love it.
I cannot recommend it enough.
We're talking about great wedding films with our DVD gurus, Mitch Bryan and Jason Heck. If you want to recommend one, or perhaps you have been to a wedding where someone actually stood up at that very critical moment and said, you know, I do object to this impending nuptial, by the way, and my name is so-and-so, and we want to hear about it. 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org. I'm not sure it's ever happened in the history of humankind.
But if it has,
yeah.
And they call in,
it'd
and
be
it's
a great
story, could be one of
we
our
could
best
break
shows
it right here. Yeah. Mitch Bryan, tell us about I Was a Male War Bride.
So I'll switch from a wedding to a bride, and a very unusual bride in this case. This was based on this was made in 1949 by the great director Howard Hawks, and was based on a book apparently called I Was an Alien Spouse of Female Military Personnel En Route to the United States Under Public Law 271 of the Congress.
That's the title?
That was apparently the title of the book that it was based on.
Wow.
My goodness. So they have shortened the title.
Yes, good idea.
And it was written by apparently a guy from Belgium, and he becomes a French officer. Cary Grant playing a French officer. Let's just imagine that for a minute. It just shows you that if you're a big movie star, you can do anything, and I guess people will go along with it, like Sean Connery playing a Spaniard with a Scottish accent.
John Wayne playing Genghis Khan.
John Wayne playing Genghis Khan. That's exactly right. So Cary Grant is a French officer who has fallen in love with Women's Army Corps officer Catherine Gates, played by the lovely Anne Sheridan. And the entire movie is built around them falling in love and then trying to accomplish a mission together while falling in love, and finally realizing they need to get married and all of the things that get in the way of them getting back to the United States, which climaxes, I'm not giving anything away, if you've seen the famous pictures, it has to do with Cary Grant putting on a dress and impersonating a woman to get back to America.
I remember that now.
So it's a screwball comedy. It's typical Howard Hawks with its rapid-fire dialogue. He was known for making great scenes. He once said that a movie should have three great scenes, no bad scenes, and if possible, a relatively effective guy in a gorilla suit gag. We don't get the guy in the gorilla suit, but we do get Cary Grant in a dress, which I think sort of qualifies. So it's typical Howard Hawks.
And a French accent?
No, of course not. He sounds just like Cary Grant.
Okay, of course. Okay.
Which is so weird.
Yeah.
But I guess they decided they needed to have some kind of, you know, deference to the source material, and also could then deal with this Congressional Public Law 271 of Congress when a member of the military wants to take home a bride, there's this law that allows that to happen. So the roles are, of course, reversed. So between the two of them tooling around Europe, he doesn't have his motorcycle license, so he has to ride in the sidecar and she has to drive the motorcycle. All sorts of gender reversals,
yeah,
you know, which sort of come to that final, you know, the final inevitable scene with him in a dress. It's a terrific, funny Howard Hawks picture, great production values. It was shot because apparently there were cast illnesses of all the different cast members. It took 8 months to make the movie, which was unusual for a movie of that time. Spent about $2.5 million on it, so it went way over budget for a movie from 1949. The funny thing is it made $4.5 million. I think it cost two, made 4.5, a little more than doubled its investment. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge hit back in those days.
Wow.
Make a movie for $2 million, make four, and everybody goes home happy.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen today,
yeah,
obviously.
Right. What's the clip we have here?
So here they are together. Cary Grant's character is trying to make contact with a lens maker named Schindler who's working in the black market. And he has taken on the guise of a local guy in the town and is telling Anne Sheridan the rules of this mission.
I came here to Bad Nauheim to find Herr Schindler, so I'm going to make the rounds of the black market hangouts and see if I can get some information about him. Now, if I'm in uniform, no one is going to tell me anything. Is that reasonable?
Yes.
See you later.
Don't you want me to help you?
No.
Oh, now, Henry, I'm sorry about the door handle. I was wrong. You were telling the truth. I'm really sorry.
Nice of you to apologize. That fixes everything.
Well, what more can I do?
I often wonder.
Oh, Henry, stop being like that. You're behaving like a little boy.
I know it.
But you said it was important. I just want to help.
Never mind.
Is it all right if I go out on my own and try to find Schindler?
Shh.
Well, maybe I could do something.
Don't do anything.
Oh, you make me so mad. You don't want me to help.
That's right. Don't do anything. If you see me, don't speak to me. You don't know me.
Why not?
Because you're an American officer in uniform, if I'm seen talking to you, they think I'm a stool pigeon.
Well, I still don't see why I can't go out by myself.
Please, just take orders. Now, remember, you don't know me.
All right, I don't know you.
You can't speak to me.
Okay, I can't speak to you.
I'm transparent. You can't even see me.
I never could, not for sour apples.
Oh.
Oh, you stubborn...
He sounds French to me.
And I don't think that plan's going to work out very well.
Yeah,
that's what
I think.
I don't
think so either. When did the movies slow down dialogue? Because, you know, you can date a film just by listening to it and the pace of the dialogue.
And this is kind of slow compared to earlier Hawks films, too. This was 49.
And compared to His Girl Friday or something.
Yeah.
This is practically on Valium.
Yeah.
Which is hard for me almost to listen to anymore because you're so used to a little bit of space, a little bit of air between lines. But, boy, those old films.
If you look at it now, Jennifer Jason Leigh attempted to do this in Kansas City, in Robert Altman's Kansas City.
And in the Hudsucker Proxy.
And it was jarring for audiences. In Kansas City, in particular, they found it very, very grating. In Hudsucker, it kind of worked for me, but it's a whole different way to make movies.
A whole different thing. Let's go to some phone calls here. Folks picking their favorite wedding films. Callie from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I just wanted to recommend Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. That's one of the movies that I always think of when I hear June weddings. They've got that great song, A June Bride. So
sing it for us, Callie.
When you marry in June, you will always be a bride. I'm an awful singer. But, it's just one of my favorite movies for June weddings.
From 1954, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. Thanks, Callie. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Pat from Leawood. Pat, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Yes, I was a wedding videographer for about 20 years and did probably close to 1,000 wedding videos in my day. And I've got three or four really quick little things I wanted to tell you that happened. One, I did have there was a mildly retarded African-American man that got up at that part where they say, does anybody here have anything to say? And his family abruptly pushed him back down after we started talking. Another one was it was a Jewish wedding at Oakwood Country Club, and it was on December 22nd, and the lead singer in the band yelled out Merry Christmas to everybody, which completely silenced the room.
Oh, boy. Man.
Another couple that had a 5- and a 7-year-old already, and they were getting married in the Catholic wedding. There's a line that says, will you accept children lovingly from God? And instead of saying we will, they said we have. I got a pretty good laugh.
Pat, thanks for the phone call. That's good.
My favorite was that it was an Italian wedding with a very prominent Italian family, and this very buxom, lovely bride married this kind of Tom Cruise California guy. And I put a wireless mic on him. Back then I used to record a half hour or so, and he's back in the sacristy, and he's saying stuff like, I don't know what happened. This guy comes up to me, and he's got these dark sunglasses on, and he tells me I got to wear these cufflinks, and so I guess that means I'm in the family now, and he's going on and on, all that stuff. And after the wedding, I come in to get the wireless mic, and he just turns ghost white and says, oh, God, you can't put any of that in the video, or I'll be in the bottom of the river.
Wow, happy wedding.
And the last one at the wedding reception, his best man gets up, and he says, I remember I was there the night the groom met the bride. I remember what he said when he saw her. Nice rack.
Okay.
Hopefully your family was very forgiving.
Yeah. Pat, thank you for the phone call.
All righty, bye-bye.
Jason, let's go on with your next pick, Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Four Weddings and a Funeral was made for $4 million. And made $245 million.
Wow.
A bigger success, if you will, than I Was a Male War Bride. The primary adjectives that come to mind with this movie are light, frothy, breezy.
Mm-hmm.
It is a British comedy with old sort of story aspects and kind of an old plot that has been dressed up, given a few naughty words, and acted by a terrific cast of very, very talented British actors.
It was made when?
1994.
Mm-hmm.
It was directed by Mike Newell, who later went on to direct such disparate films as Donnie Brasco and Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Written by Richard Curtis, who went on to write... This is talk about opening a door. The Bridget Jones films, Love Actually, Notting Hill, and the strangest love film of all, War Horse. It also introduced us, for better or worse, to Hugh Grant.
That's right. This was
where Grant's persona as a sort of charming, debonair, gaffe-prone British handsome dork kind of came about.
And he milked that role, and he milked it, and he milked it
again. And he owned pretty much the late 1990s. I mean, you know, he was in big movies like Chris Columbus's 9 Months, and you know, with Julianne Moore, and kind of was this big anchor. And then he elected to dabble in prostitution, and it didn't serve him well. But in this, he is in top form as Charles, who is what one of his exes refers to as a serial monogamist. He dates tons. He loves women, but he just can't fall in love and can't commit. And he has sort of this group of single friends, played by people like Kristen Scott Thomas and Simon Callow and John Hannah, with whom he kind of keeps going to these various weddings. Well, at the weddings, he starts running into an attractive American fashion editor named Carrie, who is played by Andy McDowell. And he realizes that, in fact, he might really have just met the one. So it's a matter of him trying to catch up to her. Well, gets engaged to a very wealthy Scottish lord, played by the terrific Corin Redgrave.
Named Buckley Dunstan.
Close. Lord something or other.
Yeah.
And so he realizes he has to try and woo her and figure out exactly what his priorities are in his life and how to buckle down, if you will. It is a movie that once it starts with the comedy, it doesn't really let off. Even some of its more somber moments are leavened with really light, dry, perfect little bits of humor. It made $250 million for a reason. You know, it's a formula that has worked. You know, you get all these people together, you give them a great writer, and you let them go. You know, if it had a weak link for me, I would say Andy McDowell. I don't, you know, whether she's in this or Groundhog Day, I don't really find Andy McDowell to be a terrific actress.
Yeah.
And she's sort of dull compared to the people around her. She's very luminous. She's very beautiful, but she doesn't shine very bright.
She's sort of faded away now, too.
Yeah, she did. She was a model to start with, and she sort of did the acting thing and has sort of fallen back into modeling and you know, probably is putting Band-Aids on her fingers from getting paper cuts from counting all the money she made, you know, during her acting phase. But, you know, she's not a huge drag on the film. I think she's just the weakest part of an overall terrific film.
What's the clip?
Well, this is we have Charles, Hugh Grant, at another wedding reception. But he is seated at the reception at a table that consists entirely of his ex-girlfriends and a guy named Alistair. And the women start swapping stories about how completely indiscreet Charles is.
There are 400 different kinds of tea. And that's not including all these so-called fruit teas. I took Veronica out to India at Christmas to look at the plantations.
Oh, excellent, yeah.
I believe you and her went out there once.
That's right.
Charles was vile. He insisted on cracking jokes all the time I was ill.
I was just trying to cheer you up, V.
Oh, you're that Veronica. Which Veronica? Charlie?
Remember Bombay?
When Charles and I were going out, he told me he'd had this interesting journey around India with vomiting Veronica. I think that was it.
I don't remember ever mentioning it. Maybe I did.
Oh, come on, Charles. I don't think I've ever been out with anyone less discreet.
Well, I don't. I think that's probably a bit of an exaggeration, isn't it, Marv?
It is not. I remember you going on about this girl, Helena, was it? Whose mother made a pass at you.
I remember this. You couldn't work it out whether it would be impolite not to accept her advances.
That's right. Mrs. Piggy, Helena was Miss Piggy, so her mother was Mrs. Piggy.
I think perhaps it was a...
We've both lost a lot of weight since then.
Okay.
Disastrous. But Hugh Grant, you know, he tousles his hair and he adjusts his glasses and he gets out of it.
Okay. Let's go to a couple quick phone calls here. John from Independence. John, good morning.
Good morning. In terms of the speed of the dialogue, I think it's got to be tied in a large extent to the advent of the Actors Studio with the method acting.
Does that make sense?
No, I think that's true. I think there was a naturalism that began to be almost required in movies. And you see movies today, and especially American audiences seem to be very uncomfortable with movies that are overtly stylized. I mean, it's one thing if it's a fantasy film. But in general, we seem to be movies are supposed to show us how things really are, some kind of version of reality. And I guess that means a more naturalistic style of conversation.
Mm-hmm. And just a lot more pauses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, John, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah. Let us take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation here about great wedding films. We'll turn to a film titled A Wedding, and then Wedding Crashers, and then finally, Bridesmaids. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation about Jesse James Jr., artists and drawing nude models, you'll find it in our weekend to-do list at kcur.org. Monday on the program, two doctors give us a little advice on making complex medical decisions. Well, this hour we're talking about great films about weddings. But first I wanted to bring in Bill Anderson, the KCUR's program director, to talk just for a moment about the upcoming, I guess, demise of Car Talk. Yeah. They're not going to be making any more live programs. And kind of a big moment in public
radio,
Bill.
Yeah, it is a big moment because for many years it's been one of the top-rated programs on NPR, and it attracts not only those who are diehard NPR fans, but it gets people what we call the audience outside of our core audience.
It brings in new listeners, that show is so
popular.
Yeah,
it really does. Yeah. And I mean, it's been a great 25-year run. And if you look back at when they incubated the show at WBUR, it's really been on the air for 35 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And we don't have any plans. You know, we're not going to knee-jerk react to this.
You're going to keep airing the program.
Okay. Yeah, definitely, Stephen. In the time slot that it has, because what they're planning to do, I think October 6th will begin the new era for Car Talk, and they will basically create shows from the archives.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got thousands of hours of archival work. So I don't think you're going to notice a huge change. And what we'll do is we'll allow the audience to tell us ultimately what direction we take with Car Talk. But I think it's going to be strong for a long time to come, to be quite honest with you.
Were you surprised by the news today that they aren't going to continue making new broadcasts?
Not really. There were sort of hints coming for a long time. And no, this news didn't come as any surprise, actually.
Okay, that's Bill Anderson, KCUR's program director. Thanks for the update.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Always good to have you here. Well, meanwhile, our DVD gurus are in the house. Mitch Bryan, a screenwriter and UMKC film prof, and Jason Heck, a movie reviewer for Inc. magazine, talking about great films about weddings. And Mitch, tell us about your next pick here, A Wedding.
A Wedding.
A Wedding.
A Wedding.
It's so simple.
Very simple.
It's a really great movie. And
When?
I believe my wife hates this movie. we were watching it the other night.
So how great is it?
It's the thing about it is it's a very arresting movie. It's a Robert Altman movie, and it was made at the height of his power. The cast is mind-blowing. And in some ways, it's one of his most experimental movies, because what he is trying to do is essentially give you a wedding and the wedding reception. It all takes place in sort of a 24-hour period. You meet all of the guests as if you were a fly on the wall. I mean, you're just going to have to get used to who these people are and figure out who they are as quickly as you can. And interestingly enough, by the end of the picture, you know who everybody is, and you really kind of feel like you've gotten to know these people. But it works this really fine line between comedy, sometimes even broad comedy, dark comedy, and drama. And you never quite know what's coming around the corner. And so for some people, that might be arresting, or that just might be, you know, you don't know what you're getting, and it gets frustrating. And it is frustrating at times. And of course, it's his great use of overlapping dialogue, which means everybody's talking over each other, and you kind of have to pay attention. You kind of have to figure out, who am I supposed to be watching in this scene, because I'm not sure exactly who's at the center of the scene.
And he lets these guys, these actors and actresses, just go with it, right? This is really organic.
It's very organic filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so for this movie, which didn't make that much money, and which was one of, you know, one of his more expensive and elaborate productions, it was probably, you know, one of those many times when the studio people were saying, this is what happens when you let filmmakers make movies. You know, we should be controlling the movies. But I think it's a really terrific film, and amazing actors are in it.
And tell us who's in it and what year it was made.
So it was made in 1978, which is when the tide was starting to turn. You know, I mean, Star Wars had come out the year before, and there was a different vibe that people were looking for, a different kind of entertainment in movies. But I mean, you've got Carol Burnett, who plays this sort of unhappily married mother of the bride, and Desi Arnaz Jr. is this groom who seems to have slept with every young woman in the cast, and Paul Dooley is the father of the bride who's got these idealized views of his daughter, and they're shattered. Mia Farrow drifts in and out of the movie in a strange sort of cameo. And so it's this very waspy family who's marrying into this Italian family, or half Italian family. The father of the groom has married a wealthy woman whose mother is sort of the matriarch, played by the great silent film star Lillian Gish, who passes away within the first 5 minutes of the movie. And it's all about, is anybody going to tell anybody she's dead, or are we going to keep this a secret because it could ruin the wedding? And good old Lillian Gish just lies like a corpse through the whole movie. I just think it's a really, really funny film. But I think in terms of Altman, coming from the Midwest, it's very much a satire of sort of Midwestern reserve and stoicism and those kind of things that we're politeness, you know, when the world is falling apart around you, you know, how do you deal with it? And I just think if you haven't seen this picture and if you're looking for something that's a little unusual, this is definitely one of the great wedding movies.
What's the clip we have here?
So amidst all of this craziness, Pat McCormick, who's this large, blundering guy, is hopelessly in love with Carol Burnett, who's married, and he's trying to set up this affair between the two of them. And so they have this secret meeting out in the meadows where he's going to propose his love to Carol Burnett.
From a wedding.
My dearest Tulip, how wonderful you came.
Yes, I did, and I came for one reason and one reason only, Mackenzie, and that was to tell you that we have got to stop meeting like this.
But, Tulip, I...
No, please, 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 just hear me out. I want you to know that I am thrilled and very flattered by all the nice things you have been saying.
I'm in love with you, Tulip.
Like that one. But we can't go on like this. Don't you understand? You have to stop.
Not until you answer this one question. I must hear I love you come out of your mouth. Right now, that's the most important opening in your body. Could you love me?
Oh, please, oh, God, please, Tommy, please. Just leave me alone.
I must hear it from your lips one way or the other.
Yes. I'm so scared.
No, I know, my dearest. Life is a frightening experience. And love is even worse.
My legs are shaking.
I won't let you fall, Tulip. I'll never let you fall. I'll never let you fall.
Please.
It's kind of stilted.
It's the comedy of awkwardness, you know, which has become such a big thing these days. You know, think about The Office and think about there's a whole sort of comic subgenre that has to do with awkwardness.
That's all The Office is anymore.
And in some ways, I think this movie was one of those, and Altman's movies in general were sort of the trailblazers into that kind of awkward comedy, you know?
Oh, that's funny. Again, that film is titled The Office. We're visiting with our DVD. A wedding. What would I say?
Awkward comedy has defined this show for I don't know how long. I got to tell you.
We're visiting with our DVD gurus about their favorite wedding films, Mitch Bryan and Jason Heck. If you have a recommendation for us, 816-235-2888. Our email address, update@kcur.org. You know, we asked our listeners on Facebook about their favorite movies featuring a wedding as its main theme. Got a lot of responses. Pam writes, classic, Father of the Bride. Modern film, 27 Dresses. Rosina writes, recent 5-year engagement. Jason Segel was great. Libby writes, Rachel getting married. Sandy says, The Bridesmaids, hands down. And Lori Hayes writes this, Father of the Bride, one we talked about here today already. Okay, lots of calls here. Let's go to grab a phone call here. Not yet. 816-235-2888. Let's go to Jason's next film, Wedding Crashers.
Let's go to my next film.
Yeah, let's do that.
2005, $40 million budget. It makes a quarter of a billion.
Yeah, I just met him.
This is... chaos in the studio is what we've got here today, folks. This show is just – everybody's in an uproar. So what we've got here is we've got Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson as a pair of chums who are professional wedding crashers. In other words, when they're not being divorce mediating attorneys, they go around to various weddings. They load up a slate. They look at engagement announcements. They go to weddings. They act like they're part of the family. Their sole goal is to go enjoy the free food at the reception and have a one-night stand with any woman who is made amorous by the wedding, which is their big theory. They go to what is going to be the wedding.
It's such
of the,
a male theory, too.
It is a male theory, yes. Isn't it? They, you know, women.
And not a bad one, by the way.
Well, Vince Vaughn is sort of the unrepentant one. Owen Wilson is the sensitive one. But they have learned from Chaz, the original wedding crasher, who is a cameo by Will Ferrell, that women are sort of – they are in the mood for a fairy tale little bit of romance at a wedding reception. And these guys, they go in there with their backstories and their purple hearts and their, you know, I played for the Yankees till I tore up my leg, or, you know, I was in the Foreign Legion. We lost a lot of good men, or I ascended Everest and we lost a lot of good men. And the women fall for it like crazy. Well, they go to the biggest wedding of the year, which is that of the daughter of the Secretary of the Treasury, William Cleary, played by Christopher Walken. And sure enough, this is the Super Bowl of weddings, and there are over 200 single women there. But look out, John Beckwith, Owen Wilson, decides to fall in love with Claire, who is played by the wonderful and luminous Rachel McAdams. And so that's the biggest mistake a wedding crasher can make, is to fall in love with his target.
She is the bride's maid.
His eldest daughter is actually the one getting married, and she's kind of a dumbbell. There is a fly in the ointment. We've got Bradley Cooper, who later went on to star in his own Hangover. It plays Sack S-A-C-K, that's right, Sack Lodge, who is Claire's boyfriend, and he is the ultimate wasp jerk. He is hyper-competitive, hyper-masculine. He is, you put a piece of peach cobbler on his plate and one on yours, and he will, you know, glare at you as he finishes his much quicker than you do. You know, touch football becomes far too rough when he's playing. And, of course, Claire is this environmentalist and a nice girl, and she believes in true love. Well, we watch Owen Wilson, sort of his wedding crasher nastiness, break down in the face of this beautiful girl. And crises are generated and bad things happen, but it takes place at this sort of Kennebunkport-type compound that the Secretary of the Treasury lives in. And, you know, he's got this great, wonderful, waspy family, and it's very dysfunctional and very goofy. And, you know, his aged mother is there, and she has a mouth like a sewer. And his other daughter is a total nympho, and she's all over poor Vince Vaughn. And she, you know, is tying him up and literally, you know, sort of draining his essence. You know, he is sort of staggering down to breakfast, needing to rehydrate, and, you know, pounding away like 90 pancakes to try and get back in the game. Jane Seymour is on hand as Walken's wife,
right.
Who is a bit of a nympho herself, who goes by Kitty Cat. The movie is actually, it's not as gross out a comedy as a lot of people might think. You know, you look at stuff like The Hangover, and it's sort of the comedy of disgust and you know, diarrhea and belching and blood and horrible things happening to people. And it's funny, but it's very over the top. This is actually much more warm-hearted. It has, it sort of turns into a female fantasy film toward the end, where these two very handsome playboy guys are kind of changed and tamed mm-hmm. by these women that they have mm-hmm. pursued. And so they become these terrific guys. And the movie kind of has this happy ending in that respect.
And a clip?
This is John and Jeremy. They're about to walk into the Cleary wedding, and they are working out the backstory for this particular wedding.
Okay, what's our backstory?
We're brothers from New Hampshire. We're venture capitalists.
I'm sick of that. Let's be from Vermont, and let's have an emerging maple syrup conglomerate.
Wait, that's stupid. We don't know anything about maple syrup.
I happen to know everything there is to know about maple syrup. I love maple syrup. I love maple syrup on pancakes. I love it on pizza. I like to take maple syrup and put a little bit in my hair when I've had a rough week. What do you think holds it up, Slick?
It's the first quarter of the big game. You want to toss up a Hail Mary. I'd like to be pimps from Oakland or cowboys from Arizona, but it's not Halloween. Grow up, Peter Pan, Count Chocula. Look, we've been to a million weddings, and guess what? Rocked them all.
They're going in with high hopes.
They're on top of the world.
Yeah, very funny movie.
That film again, Wedding Crashers. Let's go to some recommendations from our listeners for great wedding films. Paul from Kansas City, Missouri, welcome.
Hi. I would like to suggest Ang Lee's The Wedding Banquet, where you've got a gay couple, one from Taiwan, one from the States, and his parents keep trying to set him up with the perfect woman, and he delivers an unmatchable list, and then they come up with somebody who they think, and then she's not interested, and then there's this other woman who they pretend to be in love, and then, of course, the parents have to come to the States to meet her, and then now what do they do?
Ah, you were not
yeah,
in your
it's
head,
very good. It's a really good movie.
That's Ang Lee's The Wedding Banquet. Thanks, Paul.
Absolutely lovely. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Mike from Independence. Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to recommend The Apartment. You got to remember when this movie was made. It's all about a young man that falls in love with this woman that, you know, that's an elevator operator. And she's been having an affair with her married boss, so it's about adultery and stuff. So I just thought the whole realm of this picture is just great.
Before he was an everyman wonderful father, Fred McMurray was sleazy in quite a few movies, that's for sure.
That's right, yeah.
It was a very good movie for if you talk about – you got to remember when this movie was made in the times. It was made late 59, 60. Oh, I remember when I first went to see that, I was a senior in high school, and it really took me, man, because I was going to get married, and I didn't.
Nice.
Mike, bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Another Mike from Olathe. Mike, good morning to you.
Yeah, hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to reiterate a movie that you guys had talked about earlier, you know, Father of the Bride, Steve Martin version. For me, Steve Martin, no one does vulnerability better than he does, and some of the scenes where he's having to realize the loss, any father that's going through that or about to go through that with their daughter can't watch that movie without a couple of tears in their eyes.
Great recommendation, Mike. Great.
He can use surprising tenderness pretty well if you think about that last scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles when he finally makes it home and there's John Candy standing out there, you know, it's pretty great. He does tender and vulnerable very well.
Christina emails us, How to Marry a Millionaire. She recommends Lauren Bacall, Betty Grable, and Marilyn Monroe are wonderful. Just a great, hilarious film. Patrick from Lone Jack claims The Graduate as a film with a wedding at its center. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. I mean, talk about the who objects to this wedding, you know? Benjamin certainly objects to it. It's a pretty amazing wedding scene.
Mitch, tell us about your final pick today, Bridesmaids.
Yep. You know, it's funny. How much did you say that Wedding Crashers made?
Wedding Crashers pulled in, I think, 258 large.
Yeah, and Bridesmaid, $288 million. Yeah. I mean, there is clearly big money in this.
Wedding films,
And I had to sort of catch up to Bridesmaids only because I sort of thought it was going to be the female version of The Hangover, which is how they sold it. And I was sort of not as interested, I guess. And so I finally kind of got around to seeing it and realized that there's a certain degree of vulgarity in it, but it's not really. It was sort of being set up as this movie about these women who are going to go off to Vegas for some wild weekend or something. Of course, they never get to Vegas. I'm not giving anything away there. And it's much more about the relationship between two friends, played by Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph. Maya Rudolph is getting married. Kristen Wiig is going to be her maid of honor. But then there's another woman in the party, in the wedding party, played by Rose Byrne, who's starting to look like she's going to become Maya Rudolph's next best friend forever. And suddenly it throws Kristen Wiig into this complete tailspin of insecurity. She's already lost her business has gone belly up, and she doesn't have a man. She's got involved with John Hamm, who plays this terrible, polite rake of a man. And so suddenly her best friend seems to be going away. She's not only losing her to a man in terms of the wedding, but she seems to be losing her to a bridesmaid. And so it's really this kind of fight between these two girls over another girlfriend. And it's so funny. And it's so it was controversial, I guess, in the sense that, you know, can women be as gross and funny as men can?
Mm-hmm.
The short answer is, of course, yes. but it is a really clever film with lots of surprising performances and very much, I think, in terms of doing battle the way that women do battle, which is with a smile on your face and with sort of subtle digs and trying to outdo each other. And then every so often the gloves come off and it gets ugly.
What's the clip we have from Bridesmaids?
So here's a scene. Kristen Wiig is working at a jewelry shop and a young girl has come in to buy a necklace and it sort of uncorks all of the anxiety that Kristen Wiig has in her heart about friendship.
Excuse me.
Oh, hi.
I'm looking for a birthday gift for my best friend.
Oh.
I want to get her a necklace that says best friends forever.
You sure you want it to say forever?
Yeah, why?
Come on. Forever?
Forever?
I don't think you guys will be best friends forever. No offense, but, you know, the friends you have when you're younger, sometimes you grow apart. You know, when you get older, and maybe she'll find a new best friend. And maybe she'll be more successful than you are, and prettier, and richer, and skinnier, and they end up doing everything together.
You're weird.
I'm not weird. Okay?
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not, and you started it.
No, you started it. Did you forget to take your Xanax this morning?
God, I feel bad for your parents.
I feel bad for your face.
Okay, well, call me when your boobs come in.
You call me when yours come in.
What, do you have 4 boyfriends?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Have fun having a baby at your prom.
You look like an old mop.
You know what? You're not as popular as you think you are.
I'm very popular.
Oh, I'm sure you are. Very popular.
Well, you're an old, single loser who's never gonna have any friends.
You're a little...
But yeah, we dropped
That's
a little
from Bridesmaid.
Dropped a little sound effect in there. You'll have to watch the movie to see what she calls her.
Oh, that is just funny. Angela writes this. She recommends 16 Candles. The whole movie is preparing for Molly Ringwald's sister's wedding. Meanwhile, everyone else forgets Molly's 16th birthday. I laugh at the scene where the bride has taken too many muscle relaxers and is falling down and totally out of it during the ceremony.
Hammered at her own wedding.
Very funny movie. Hey, thank you both very much for coming in today.
Always
good to have you here. Our DVD gurus are Mitch Bryan and Jason Heck. You'll find a list of the films they reviewed today and more information about our show at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. If you're looking for a great film to see in a theater this weekend, check out our Indie, Foreign, and Documentary Film Critics 3-to-See list, their favorites showing on area screens. Monday on the program, 2 doctors give us a little advice on making complex medical decisions. Our show's theme music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help this week from KCUR's Danny Alexander, Greta Wendelin, and Kim Noble. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.